Friend Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, as you heard in the introductory music. And I will be here with you tonight and with our special guest for the next 2 hours. Got a couple minutes late start. Some weird things going on with communications tonight, as they are, it seems, all day long everywhere. As people are waking up, the powers that be have to make it difficult for us, but we always come through, don't we? Lots of crazy things going on. We've heard some recent explanations as to the true cause of our financial problems. And it seems to me, as I recall, just a few weeks ago, our president was saying that he didn't understand how all of these difficult financial hardships fell upon us. No one could see it coming, and it was a dire emergency that we have this bailout, that we get this multi-billion-dollar package into the hands of the central bankers and who are failing miserably because of their corrupt ways. And the real cause of these problems has not been addressed by the mainstream media nor by the administration. They're involved in all of this corruption, so we can't expect them to tell us the truth without them setting themselves up for indictment and a long jail sentence, not to mention charges of treason. To be carrying out these acts during time of war is treason in and of itself, according to their own laws. But somehow they find themselves exempt from the laws that they create. So we have all of these dichotomies going on. And if we were to take the president at his word of a couple of weeks ago, or the Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson, or the chairman of the Federal Reserve Ben Bernanke, or the head of the Securities Exchange Commission Christopher Cox, none of these people could see this coming. Yet, as recently as yesterday, the President of the United States clearly emphasized the fact that this has been occurring over a long period of time. How someone 2 weeks ago could say that they didn't see this coming, but now he has the wisdom to say this has been going on for a long time and it was going to take a long time to fix it. Doesn't make sense. And so if we use our discernment, we can look at this and determine that we don't have to buy this story or any of these stories. We can see the handwriting on the wall that this is just corruption trying to explain itself away through lies and more deceit. And it's going to force us eventually to take responsibility. And we've been talking about that every night now, since a week ago Thursday, starting on November 6th, actually, we began a serious discussion of the steps that one can take to claim responsibility, to recognize our individuality, our creativity, our oneness with God and with each other and with the universe, which is quite the opposite of what we're being spoon-fed on a daily basis by the mainstream media through their propagandized ways. And so we can go a step further in recognizing our individuality, our wholeness, or our holiness, or our sacred nature, and we can rise above this. And so we're going to continue these discussions, and much of this is in response to the listening audience emails and requests, even on the air, that we talk about these things and keep hammering on these ideas until they sink in. The question to be answered, what can I do, or what can we do to help. We see what's going on. What can we do? How can we become empowered? And so, to the best of our ability, we're showing you what we know from experience. This is a combination of science, a combination of metaphysics, clear thinking, stepping outside the box, and not accepting the false reality that we've been given. We must recognize that these are illusions that we're facing, and we're agreeing on that. At least I know my listening audience is agreeing that we're coming to a realization that there's something else available to us, that there can be other outcomes than the doom and gloom that we hear nonstop, 24/7 from the mainstream media and from our representatives in Washington who would prefer to make us their serfs, their slaves. We're not going to lie down and pretend like this isn't going to happen. Quite to the contrary, we're going to face these issues, face these problems, and have meaningful discussions about what we can do to liberate ourselves. We're talking about freedom. We're talking about our sovereignty as God has created us and all sovereign things that are created in the universe. And if they want to oppress someone and turn someone into a slave, let them do it to each other. They would make the perfect players in those roles. Everything they do is scripted out. Everything is planned. And so if they can plan, we can plan too. And we can choose other plans. We don't have to accept the ones that they've given us. So we've spoken about the individual and knowledge in real time, not in the past sense, not going back, repeating the same mistakes, but creating solutions, creating new possibilities. We must be able to communicate these ideas with each other, not bickering, not starting wars. And we have to come to a consensus of what a responsible human being is about. We've talked about this on many shows, the importance of virtuous living and establishing some order out of this chaos. And not the kind of order that they would like, because their method is always order out of chaos, but it's through repression. It's through usurping your freedoms and your civil rights. People around the world are waking up to this, and they're wondering when Americans are going to do that. They've got us controlled by having us focus on things that bring us pleasure, even the temporary things, and or diversions such as entertainment, movies, sporting events, concerts. Concerts are great if the music is good, but much of what they've engaged us in is mindlessness. It's void of the passion that you find in real art, in creativity, and they have us focusing on the negative. And we listen to these things, but we're not using our discernment. So we're going to talk also about listening with the heart, listening with the intellect, and really observing what is going on, really discerning what is going on. And through that, I'm sure that we will arrive at many, many solutions for our many, many problems, whether they're with our energy resources, our food supplies, our health issues, our education, even religion. Politics, I don't think, can be fixed. I think it's we could flush politics down the toilet and no one would miss it. So with that, I'd like to bring back our regular Friday night guest. He is a scientist himself, a scientist extraordinaire. He's also an inventor, an author, a lecturer, and a teacher. He makes a great co-host on Evident Footprints, and he's a good friend as well, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show tonight.
Thank you, Don. Thank you a lot. That was a very interesting preamble to the show.
Well, here we are now. We're on 10 days after the election, November the 14th or 15th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone, halfway through the month of November. time is really flying right now. And we're headed in a direction right now that, that's got a lot of people really wondering where we're going. You get the feeling that people are still looking inside the box, trying to see what's going on outside the box from within, don't you?
Oh, I get a lot of feelings, but I know what you mean. By the way, before we get into all of that, let me just mention one thing. During your talk there a few minutes ago, you mentioned how people are writing in and asking what they can do for empowerment. You know, the first thing that I have to stress when it comes to that is, you know, you can't have any fear about becoming involved because you're already involved, right up to the eyeballs. And if these creeps wind up taking over and turning this into a fascist state, believe me, you'll be 100% convinced of how involved you really are. The trick is not to let it get to that. And what they're afraid of more than anything is unity of the populace and us directing our intentions toward them in such a way as to force an issue. If you want to know what to do, just start bombarding those lunatics with letters of displeasure, telling them that you know what's going on, that this needs to be fixed, that they're not going to be reelected, you know, that they're all a bunch of treasonous individuals, et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, if you're going to take the attitude that you're afraid there might be reprisals for writing the letters or sending faxes or emails, then, quite honestly, whatever you get, you deserve. It's all about responsibility. Freedom always is. And if we shirk on this duty, then we cannot complain about the concentration camps, the executions, the closing down of business, the guards on the street corners, the curfews, all the stuff that's going to be coming. You just have to quietly accept it. So the choice is ours, folks. Just wanted to get that in there, Don. I'm sorry.
Yeah, actually, I mean, you're hitting it right on the head. I had the opportunity yesterday and a little bit today to listen to a message that was recorded a number of years ago. In fact, this message came my way courtesy of one of my listeners, and I was actually able to connect some dots in my research because of this wonderful email I got from this listener, and then opened my eyes to some evidence that I had uncovered, in which there were some holes in the information. You know, we're trying to identify some people, and I ended up getting a link that actually took me to the picture of this individual, and it's a dead ringer for an unidentified person in another photo that's applied to this research. So here we had a mini miracle take place. And I'm listening to the message that this person put out over a period of 40 or 50 years. And as I listen to it, I'm thinking, okay, where is the meat here? When are we going to hear what this message is about? And I realized that this message was highly, highly controlling, that I was hearing a message coming from a cult leader who was espousing all kinds of untruths about the nature of a human being. And this is supposedly a channeled message from another planet. One series of messages from Mars and another one from Venus. And I suppose it could have been coming from a TV show just as easily, or the moon. It really wouldn't matter where this message was coming from. It was hogwash. Although the person identified an issue about facing fear, which was very correct, I wouldn't necessarily point out responsibility starting off with the topic of bravery, that regardless of what you do, you have to be brave. There was no foundation laid as to how one would go about problem solving or identifying what a human being is and what the desires or the purposes of a human being would be. And it was just all over the place, and I realized this is just a cult. And there were actually two people conducting a classroom study period for 2 hours on these snippets of these speeches that were compiled over this 50-year period, and none of it made any sense. It was another aspect of mind control that I didn't even think was out there. And so I was overwhelmed with this conviction that, number one, we're doing the right thing here, doing these shows, at least for a couple of weeks. If we only do it for a couple of weeks and come back at a later time, give people a chance to put some of these ideas to work in their everyday lives. I can tell you just what we've covered in the last week surpasses 50 years of work that I heard in a few of these recordings. And the difference is that we don't have to start a religion to do this. These people actually started a religion on these so-called intergalactic channeled messages. And I guess, you know, when people just so readily accept this information as the truth without using any discernment, just blind acceptance, I can see how we can easily be led astray. That's the point I'm making. But through someone's good intent, I actually connected some dots in my own research. So there's light at the end of the tunnel in this message. The teaching that I heard, though, was just, it was crazy. It focused on bravery, and then it focused on fear. But I heard nothing except just the discussion about fear or how to be brave because fear is coming now. Fear is going to get you. and really no practical tools to use to really put somebody on a path of problem solving or developing a higher form of consciousness. Ultimately, I think everybody is going to be faced with that dilemma, that problem. There's going to come a time when people are going to realize that if they don't get their act together, they're going to be powerless to do anything. And it doesn't have to be that way. So I just wanted to share that with you because there's a lot of junk out there, I have to tell you. There's a lot of really crazy stuff.
And well, this was it has been.
Yeah, that's for sure. This is somewhere
to be honest with you, Don, whether we're talking about, you know, religion, politics, philosophy, science, medicine, doesn't matter. You actually always have that problem. There's so much disinformation and so many lies that anybody that's on the path looking for truth is forced to wade through so much garbage. And in the process, they may find one or two little nuggets. And as a result of that, I think that's why a lot of people just give up. They say, well, you know, where the heck am I? Where are we going? It's easier to just go with the flow than it is to, to keep up the adventurous attitude and look for, you know, a path to real truth. But quite honestly, if you don't do that, you'll regret it eventually. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. We've had, just for purpose of a recap of sorts, and this is not going to be a long monologue on my part here. When we talk about facing a problem and coming up with a solution, we have to recognize or we have to remember that we have been conditioned to respond to things that we see around us, you know, our everyday observations and where we get our information. People want to know what's going on in the world, so what do? When they come home? They're in their car driving home from work. They turn on the radio. They hear the news. And what they hear is all they're hearing, so they assume that they're hearing the truth. Or they get home, maybe they listen to music on the way home, or some talk show like this, and they might be talking about the local sports team or talking about some new idea that somebody had, or a book or something that may have some value to it. They get home, they turn on the TV, and they listen to this official news, and you and I both know, and our listening audience knows, those that really pay attention behind the scenes and through the alternative media, they know that what they're hearing is not the truth. So their antennas are up. They're discerning the difference between what they see from other sources and what they're getting from the mainstream. And so the question has to come up, well, if this isn't the truth, why are they telling us this? Why are they lying to us? Why are they misrepresenting what is actually going on? And so we have to remember that we're not going to hear the truth suddenly from these people. That's not their intention. They're digging their hole deeper and deeper day by day. And the ridiculous nature of the topics that they cover, saying people want this, this is what the people want. If they ever called you up and asked you what you like to hear on the news? Never called me, and I'm sure they've never called anyone in the listening audience and asked that question. But they make these blanket statements, which is just further propaganda to get people thinking that things are a certain way. And so we don't see the facts as they're presented to us. We don't see the ridiculous statements that are made in public documents, for example. And, you know, Barack Obama has been on everybody's lips because he's already betraying the promises he's made in his campaign. He's already done an 180-degree turn on all of those issues that he promised everyone. Well, they were just promises, and they weren't based upon fact. It was what people wanted to hear. It's always been that. And
right.
that's not going to solve our problems. That's the point I'm making, is that we must recognize these things and recognize when we're being hoodwinked. And this thing about discernment and thinking, feeling things in the heart center and recognizing the difference between that and this false heart that they have put in our brains, the ego attachment. And you and I covered a lot of this last week when we talked about superconsciousness. And I don't think one can ever spend too much time on this, but we want to, you know, make it interesting and easy to understand, too, as we talk about these things, because there's a lot of directions we can go. I'm finding that people, when they're presented new information, they're not really paying attention to where the information is coming from. They're relying again on the mainstream media. Well, the mainstream said this. This is a change. So this must, maybe they're telling us the truth now. I don't see that happening. I'm sure you don't yourself. But if you do, certainly correct me.
No, I don't see anything like that happening, but you did bring up a really interesting point about the fact that Obama's already making reversals. First of all, I'd like to point out that there has never been a president in my lifetime, I can't speak about anything before that, but in my lifetime there has never been one president that ever kept his campaign promises. So I don't know why we should expect something different. But what's interesting here is that there was such an incredible passion, almost a herd response to electing Obama, that you know, they just were so excited to see their man get in there that it was all done with emotions. There was no discernment, as you called it. But, you know, what's really interesting about that is, and we didn't touch on this last week, but perhaps I should have, the mob instinct or the herd instinct is actually lower than normal consciousness. Never mind super consciousness. It's when there's only one mind, and it's kind of operating on a common feeling. As a matter of fact, I was talking to David this morning, who of course you know.
David, and, hi. Yes.
Yeah, and he was telling me that somebody that was actually at one of the bigger Obama rallies was expressing his concern about the fact that people weren't really analyzing what this man was promising. You know, they were saying, he was saying something like, this guy isn't even in the position to deliver this stuff, never mind is it true or not. And the response that he got from the small a group that he was addressing slightly away from the main crowd was, it's about time you stop thinking about that nonsense and start feeling what's happening. Can't you feel the excitement? Can't you feel the wave? Well, you know, that's exactly the same kind of nonsense that people said in Nazi Germany when the Führer got up to speak. You know, can't you feel it? Can't you feel it? There was never any forethought about any of it. It was all animal response, you know, below normal human conscious activity. It was the herd instinct. And we have to be so careful about that, because this is exactly what they want to engender, and this is what they use to steer the human populace in the direction that they want to take it. Now, what the listeners should realize, in a certain sense, this is a perfect opportunity for them to become conscious of something higher. When their man is elected and he's already reneging on promises and making reversals on statements that he clearly made because he knew that that's what we wanted to hear, then it stands to reason that there's another agenda. And we shouldn't just take it in stride and say, oh, well, he's just getting acclimated, he's readjusting his curriculum, or whatever other excuse you want to throw out there. The fact of the matter is, he's been given his orders. And we have to be conscious of the fact that he's going to be marching to someone else's tune. And that's one of the reasons why these reversals are already happening. The guy didn't even get inaugurated yet.
Yes. The first person he appointed to his cabinet, his chief of staff, is Rahm Emanuel, the son of an Israeli terrorist, Benjamin Emanuel. Rahm Emanuel was on the board of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which is the whole reason for this bailout. What does that speak, if it doesn't speak volumes, and point out where the corruption is? And this ended up being a focal point of my research, is the real estate corruption. We were on the show, I don't know if I mentioned this to you, because this is something that became clear to me either last Friday or Saturday, that his so-called grandmother, Madeline Dunham, was an escrow agent at the Bank of Hawaii, and so she was facilitating real estate deals. Actually, she was a broker as well. She was selling bank loans, mortgages, as well. So there's even a potential of a conflict of interest. The escrow agent is a neutral party in a real estate transaction. I found a tribute to her on her retirement day, and it was from one of the former bank employees, and it made numerous connections between some of the unsavory characters that were hidden by name or by lack of name in Obama's autobiography. So his own words now are coming back to bite him. The people who have been involved in what I see as corruption, the money laundering is that. It's corruption. And they're all doing it. And that's why we have this whole problem. We're going to have more of it. And so you bring someone in who knows the game, who has been responsible for destroying this nation's economy. You're bringing that person in to head your staff. What is the reason? To fix it or to continue the corruption? Common sense dictates it's to continue the corruption and to keep obscuring the facts. We can't seem to get a handle on this somehow. People are reveling in these choices that have been made. The claims that we have to be out of Iraq and out of Afghanistan. Now there's talk of a draft, drafting people all the way up to age 42, men and women, into what? Into an army to create another war? This is the man that's declaring he's going to create peace around the world? It's just more insanity. And so
we get his super police force that he wants to create.
Oh yeah,
with more funding than the U.S. Army. What is that for?
Yeah, he wants to have even a civilian police force.
Sure.
I mean,
the days of friendly Officer Joe Bolton are gone. You know, this is the return of the brown shirts, folks. Get used to it.
Well, it's not a done deal yet, and I say that because there is still this issue. He still has not produced a valid birth certificate. And to boot, now it appears that there's hanky-panky going on with his selective service registration, that it's all a fraudulent document. And he's got it signed July 30th, and the postal stamp says July 29th. And it's a stamp that they haven't used for 30 years or more. It's just insane what's going on. And somehow people aren't held to these basic standards to qualify for this office. This is the person that we want leading our country?
Well, look at the situation with Hitler. Schicklgruber was a wallpaper hanger, for God's sake. And just because he wrote Mein Kampf doesn't mean that he was qualified to lead the country, but he was also a madman. So somehow that made him the perfect candidate for all this.
Mm-hmm.
And if it wasn't for certain serendipitous situations, the guy might have actually conquered most of the world. So you have to be really, really careful. Because these things repeat themselves over and over again unless we learn our history. And learn from our history.
Well, we know that there was a lot of genocide going on, and it wasn't just the Jews. There were a lot of ethnic groups that were almost completely exterminated. You look at the Armenians; how many Armenians were slaughtered? You never really hear that mentioned either.
No.
I've heard the figure was as high as 22 million. Why don't we hear about that? Well, the Armenians aren't controlling the media. That's one reason why we don't hear that number.
Yes, there were others. I mean, the gypsies were attacked. Homosexuals were attacked. The Russians, of course, and the Poles and the Ukrainians. There was an awful lot of people that were done away with as best they could.
Mm-hmm.
And for what? That's the other thing. What does it all serve? You know, I mean, it's such a demonic and mindless act. There are ethnic groups here because they're supposed to be here. Who the heck has the right to make a determination that the race needs to be purified. And purified by what? So that we can wind up with more monsters controlling the world? No, those mindless drones that did all that work certainly wouldn't be classified as human. As referring back to your remark that you made, you know, earlier in your soliloquy about classifying what is human. You know, just because it has two arms and two legs and a head doesn't mean it's human.
Oh, yeah. Well, we know that. We're learning that every day, aren't we?
Oh, heaven help us.
Well, we could camp out on this. I guess the reason I'm pointing these things out, these things are going on in real time. Now, we can swallow it hook, line, and sinker like we do every 4 years, or we can really stop and look at this and say, this has to be fixed. This is an issue that has to be addressed. I have to say, the preponderance of the email that I've received just by people that have visited my website and read my research and listened to this show or listened to some other shows that I've been on where we've discussed these issues in specificity. It's not about race here. Yet the way this thing has been created, it's designed to become a race war. You have the hopes of many, many black Americans resting on this Messiah that's been created, a media idol. It's not on his record. In fact, his record can't be substantiated. It's being debunked. His claims, even his relationships. We've been told this story about the family from Kansas. You and I talked about that. And I said, Dorothy Gale, don't worry. Kansas still belongs to you and the Wizard of Oz. We've been sold that Kansas story, and nothing in Kansas can be substantiated. To the contrary, what has come out is there is a CIA file on the grandparents of Barack Obama that goes back to World War II, back to Boeing in Wichita. And it doesn't mean that they were living in Kansas. It means that Stanley Armour Dunham sabotaged the manufacturer of some planes and stole some blueprints. They know this. They have DNA tests that show that the Dunhams are not related to Barack Obama in any way, shape, or form. It's not there. I came to those conclusions through my research that we're not even talking about a family here. We're talking about people that were put together to pretend like they're a family. And here now, this information, I even came to the conclusion that they were likely CIA agents. And the CIA has a dossier on this guy. In fact, I'm able to connect him with CIA agents now. Since I wrote the last article, I've got another piece. And it's expanding astronomically day by day because of the dots that I can connect. These are important issues because they show that the guy can't produce papers. And everybody supposedly part of his family is in no way related. They know this. They know this. Why is it being tolerated? Who's pulling the strings? How much blackmail and extortion can go on in Congress and the Senate and in the Justice Department that this is not looked at and dealt with? See,
sure, and you bring up a really good point when you include the Justice Department. What was the name of that gentleman who filed suit regarding the Obama qualifications for president?
There are two, Phil Berg in Philadelphia and Andy Martin in Chicago.
Okay, and isn't it interesting that both judges refused to allow that to gain momentum? I mean, normally, wouldn't you expect, first of all, the judge himself should have an interest in the outcome of the country? And secondly, even if he didn't, he's supposed to remain impartial, and due to the so-called freedoms that we're supposed to have. It's supposed to go through to fruition and be properly adjudicated.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to due process in this case?
Well, there's a deadline in the Andy Martin case. Something has to happen in Hawaii by the 18th. Now, the governor and the secretary of the health department and I guess the attorney general, I don't have their names at my fingertips right now or on the tip of my tongue, but they have sealed the records, which to me is nothing but a bluff. We have this story of Madeleine Dunham dying on the 3rd of November, the day before the election, as if this shuts the door and there can be no investigation. Well, there's a CIA file showing who these people are, and the CIA has conducted DNA tests off of wine glasses that both of the Dunhams have drunk from, so they know that there's no relation there. They know that. So why isn't that being handled? Well, we know that how corrupt the CIA is. We know who's pulling their strings. So this is an international affair. So it comes down to, are we going to allow the rest of the world to tell us how to run our country? This country still belongs to these people that live in this country, despite the proclamations of people in the government. It's just organized crime. I'm sorry. I see it no other way. I'm sure you do, too. So if the judges are overlooking this, then one can only assume that they're part of the same organized crime network.
Oh, absolutely. But the deeper message is, don't just sit there like a hard-boiled egg and say, oh, isn't that odd? The judges aren't allowing this to proceed. You have to go a little bit further than that if you want to stimulate your higher consciousness. You connect the dots. You say 1 and 1 equals 2. You do something, and you say, hey, I smell a rat. You know, what happened to that facility in the adult American mind? I mean, even kids know when something is suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the American adults are just drifting along in some dream world while all of this is happening around them. I mean, I don't know about everybody else, but I'm real concerned about all this. And it's up to us to do something about it. I mean, God bless you for all the efforts you've put into this and for getting the information out on this network. It's a tragedy that nobody in mainstream media has the gumption to do anything. But there's shenanigans going on, and believe me, they're high level stuff.
Well, we'll see what happens. Now, I have my suspicions about the Andy Martin lawsuit. You know, this statement that the records are sealed and, you know, that whether you open them or you seal them, there's nothing to seal. If the guy could have produced a valid birth certificate, he would have done so already. Now there's the question of his selective service registration. It appears that it was likely filled out in 2008, and they tried to make it look like a document that was filled out in 1980. And there are so many mistakes on it. Again, I mean, they're blatant errors. It's obviously another forgery. So now we have two important documents presented to the public that are forgeries, which in and of themselves are crimes. They're felonies. And this is the best that someone can do to prove who they are. It's beyond reason. So let's start using our discernment, folks. That's all I can really say there.
Well, you know, this is a perfect opportunity right here, actually. You don't have to do anything really outstanding, like generate a lawsuit of your own. But I don't see any reason why the listeners, if every person listening to this show would write a brief letter to their congressman or their representative, or perhaps even, you know, to higher figures in Washington and demand that this issue be resolved. That's not so hard to do. It'd take you 15 minutes and a stupid 42-cent stamp. You want to know what you can do? That's one thing you can do. And the thing of it is, the more you do, the more you'll have the capability of doing. If you get off your behinds and you actually sit down and write a letter and say, look, this is a crucial issue. This yo-yo doesn't want to produce proof that he's an American citizen by birth. It's a constitutional requirement for anybody to run for the presidency. So it's a real important issue. If we don't stand up and defend it, then we're the ones who are chucking our Constitution. That's our right. That's our right to demand this of him. And we can't sleep through this and wonder how it's going to turn out. Make it turn out the way it should turn out, for God's sake. If 20 million Americans write a letter, believe you me, it's going to have an impact. Not because those people are concerned and loyal to our country, but because they're afraid of losing their jobs. They're afraid that there could be further ramifications. So we're the ones that have to stir the pot here and make something happen. You know, it's not so difficult to write a letter. I mean, wouldn't you say, Don, isn't that a reasonably good first step on this crucial issue? Well, folks, it looks like we were disconnected on that, and so we haven't been able to reestablish contact with Don, and I'm on the air alone. But this is a perfect example of the way in which these folks operate. They don't want this information to get out to you, and they certainly don't want 20 million Americans writing letters. So that in itself should give you an affirmation of how important this is to the future of this country. And that's all I can say on that issue. Unfortunately, without Don to be here, we're going to have to wing it a little bit, and I don't mind doing that. Don was very heavily interested in pursuing this entire concept of higher consciousness. And by the way, all of this ties into higher consciousness, too. It isn't just a question of writing letters for the sake of making a political change. It will transform you if you do these things as well. And you have to remember that. When we take positive steps and do the right thing with the right intention behind those actions, then it has a great effect upon our own evolvement and our spiritual awakening. And that's something which is very, very important. And it's crucial, as a matter of fact, to our development and to our true functioning as human beings. Now, Don wanted to go over at some point in this show the various hierarchies that are represented by consciousness. And, of course, we started to talk about that last week. I don't know if the same listeners are here or not. But we had talked about the fact that there's this herd instinct or the animal consciousness, which is at the very bottom of the consciousness pyramid, so to speak. And then after that, we have, well, that also incorporates self-awareness to some extent, because self-awareness is not just being aware that you have a body and that you're alive, but also that you are capable of pondering yourself. So those types of functions are perhaps at the foundation of this arrangement of consciousness. And then the next thing that we have, of course, is mind. Our mind is associated with the brain, and it allows us to use those higher facilities for thinking and for guiding the actions of the body. But every ancient text that gets into this subject also relates to the fact that there are also astral levels of consciousness. That would be what we refer to as the astral body, the next higher octave of the physical body. And the astral body, which is composed of an ectoplasmic life energy, determines what happens in the physical body. And then, of course, taking it up another notch, the astral body has the equivalent of a mind, which is what we refer to as the soul, and that is over and above the astral. And then, of course, over and above the soul is pure spirit, which forms the almost the apex of our pyramid. And then at the very top is divinity, or the Godhead.
Speaking of divinity, I'm back, Jim.
Oh, my goodness, what a statement. Well, welcome back. That was a very interesting experience, and I'm sure that the listeners will be stimulated to know that it wasn't a normal technical glitch. I think that when I was making those suggestions that somebody out there didn't like it, Don. It was just too well-timed.
Well, I heard you say, get off your duff, and then everything seemed to just go into complete lockdown. So we reestablished communication, though.
Well, all I was really recommending was that they write and demand that this situation be resolved, you know. And it was very important. I don't know how much of that message got out, and I don't remember exactly what I said, because obviously I was speaking extemporaneously. But in your absence, in case you didn't hear it all, I went back to the natural hierarchy of consciousness, and basically was reviewing the various states of human consciousness between the lowest animal responses and then all the way up to pure spirit and the Godhead, and that's when you came in.
Okay. It was good timing then.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, thanks for filling in there.
Hey, no problem. Well, it's kind of an interesting thing, you know. I talk about consciousness when you were absent. I had no problem in my own mind, you know, taking over the show for you. But the weirdest thing that kept plaguing me was that I had no way of knowing if I was just talking into a dead phone or if the message was actually getting out. It was a really weird feeling.
Mm-hmm. It is. Well, you have to use your discernment, don't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah. When I do a solo show, it's kind of like that. But you get a sixth sense for the listening audience out there. You can feel that people are listening and contemplating what we're saying. And they occasionally will call in and just to let me know, to reassure me that there is someone out there listening. Well, I didn't want to interrupt your flow because it sounded like you took the high road there, and that's eventually where we intend to go anyway.
Well, what I wanted to do was to, you know, I always have a fear of getting too bogged down in the immediate concerns and then never pitching the higher stuff.
Yeah.
And so I felt that might be a good moment to change direction a little bit. And that's why I laid down those. Now, it's interesting to note that there are six levels, and there probably are more, but the ones that are obvious, there are six levels of consciousness or octaves that pertain to human existence, and I mentioned them in your absence, Don, as body, mind, astral, soul, spirit. And then divinity at the top of the chart. And what's really interesting is that you have a very similar kind of an arrangement in physics as well. And there are six levels that take you from the physical realm where the laws of everyday interaction occur, all the way up to the point where we reach that really abstract area that is usually referred to as the structured space or structure of creation, which is one step, I presume, below divinity. And if you're interested, I would at least like to mention what they are and how they pertain to things, because there's one level there of really great interest, which we could expand upon, if not tonight, certainly in another show. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, fine. Go ahead. Sure.
Okay, well, it's really interesting because we start off, at the very bottom of the list here, I put a concept which is known as rate of change of power. Rate of change of power is like, actually in physics it's referred to as jerk. Not the kind in Washington. This is different. And basically its dimensionality is force times acceleration. But the one that is above that, which people are probably more familiar with, is known as power. And power is defined as force times velocity. Now, there's a trend you'll see developing in this interesting little list. The one above power is work or energy, and I have a lot to say about energy, so I'm going to concentrate on work because we know that's real. And that's defined as force times distance. And then we go to the next level up, and it's referred to as action. Now, action is getting to be something fascinating because almost everybody is instinctively familiar with work, because if you even push a lawnmower once in a while, you're familiar with what happens when force is exerted through a distance. But action is a little bit more remote from our normal understanding because it is essentially the product of mass and motion. As a matter of fact, it's momentum times distance. And that's really very interesting because you have now stripped away all of the attributes that are caused by time, with the exception of the velocity component associated with the momentum. But here you have a situation like an object moving through space, for instance, which possesses mass and it's traveling at a fixed speed, and so it's just kind of manifesting in motion, but it isn't doing anything. So there's action but no work. Now, if we go one octave higher from action, you get into something really interesting, and there's no name for it in normal physics that I'm aware of. But I call it cause, because it is from this that all the rest of the categories that I mentioned actually flow from this. And it's basically related to geometry and structure. And what it is mass, and it's basically mass times distance squared. And just from this alone, where there's no more motion and no more time, you literally wind up with the structural elements necessary to create. You have mass, and you have some kind of distance. And those are the basic building blocks. Now, the math that I know how to do kind of stops there, because if you go to the next one, then you start removing dimensionality, and you're going to probably wind up with something that I don't even know how to define. But so I just put the next one as divinity. So that those are six levels of activity which constitute the things in the physical world that we understand and how they propagate down to us. Everything seems to become more obvious, more dense, and more interactive with us as it comes from the higher octaves downward. And I mean, frankly, we can do a similar chart like this for electromagnetics. I'm sure you can do one for optics. I'm sure you can do one for music. I'm sure we can do one for biological activities. So the point I'm trying to make is that in consciousness, we not only want to just concentrate on our own immediate evolution, even though that's the most important thing, but by realizing that the universe is a far grander and more complex place than we normally want to be concerned about, once you start to concentrate on these other levels of existence and these higher forces, that creates a feedback loop which excites and stimulates our own consciousness. And it's the use of consciousness and the directing of its actions to higher and higher levels of contemplation that bring about the changes within us that we want to see. So it's like a muscle. You know, you're never going to be able to press 350 pounds if you never press any weight at all. Mm-hmm. You have to start small and then build that muscle up, or those muscles, I should say, until you can bench press, you know, 350 pounds. The same thing with your consciousness. The more you use it, the more you expand it, the more it develops. And then it feeds back stuff to you. And that's the thing that I think people missed on, is the fact that just like they have those circuits that you used to be able to connect up to give you biofeedback and help you learn to do things that only the yogis knew how to do at one point, like slow down your heart rate, adjust your metabolism, all these different things. Those work by sending you back affirmation of the fact that you're making a change in your body. And as a result of that, you learn more quickly that you can do that. Well, when you start using these higher realms of consciousness, the universe sends you stuff back, and it becomes a closed loop. So after a while, you not only become conscious of yourself and conscious of the fact that you're conscious, you become conscious of the fact that there's something else, and eventually when you tighten that loop and expand that process enough, you become conscious of God. And that's the kind of stuff that we should really be striving for, because there's been so much given to us as human beings with this capability. It's just a shame that we prefer to live so close to ground level.
In the context of what you're proposing here, do you see that when we look at our knowledge in a past sense, in other words, and you and I talked about this before, I brought this up before, and maybe it bears repeating, because I see that what you're describing is a process of the now, of perceiving all of this and bringing this action, which is all coming from the universe, from these different levels, in a present state, not in a past sense. And when we, in our lower vibratory rate, are focusing on things that we know, or the known, and the I, or the ego, we are focusing on the past. We're not looking at our potential in this higher sense. So what I'm basically saying is, this information that is free or available to us, if we seek it out and connect with it, is going to propel us above the state that we're in right now, merely because we're stuck in the past. We're sort of in a rut, repeating the same mistakes and thinking that if we just modify it a little bit, still operating in this past sense based on what is known, not on what there is to know. Am I making myself clear?
I know what you're saying, and I agree with you, because even the mathematics that's associated behind the six levels of physical law that I just related is really very interesting, because if you look at the way you can write these formulas, and it's all very impressive, but what's much more interesting is to look at the formulas themselves and then express the dimensionality of each formula. What I mean by that is, you know, we say force times velocity. Well, you can break down force into a substructure. You can break down velocity into a substructure. And all of these have terms in the study of physics. But when you do that, you notice that at the very bottom, we're talking about seconds cubed. Then you go to seconds squared. Then you go to seconds. Then you go to the odd powers. And then finally, when you get to the very top, there is no second. Time drops out of the thing altogether. And so this is exactly what we were talking about last week when we said that the psychics that tune into this stuff and receive it as truth coming from the now have reached a level where they're operating beyond time. And what's so interesting about it is that their mind is capable of making this jump even though their body remains in the temporal state. And this is actually reflected in this type of an investigation on other levels. Like, for instance, we had a couple of shows where we talked about Tesla's concerns about the reality of energy. And if you really study this stuff, you find out that energy can't exist here. Energy, in the true sense of what it is suggested to mean, is something that has to operate outside of time. When we use it here, we have to stop time artificially to figure out what the energy level is that we want to talk about, and that's the reason why it's used for accounting purposes. In our realm, where time is, you know, you might say the main vector that we follow in everything that we do, the operator which gets the most done is power, not energy. And then if you go beyond energy, you know, then you get into action and all these other things that I mentioned, which are even harder to understand. So the sense that I got out of what you were mentioning is that real truth coming from the Godhead is not it's not involving time. It's always now. It's always whatever it is. And I think this, in part, the realization of this, in part, explains why there are errors made, even by people who are pretty adept at getting information from those higher levels of consciousness. When you bring it back into our time-bound reality, we have the subconscious habit of interpreting it in the light of what we know of the behavior in three-dimensional worlds. And maybe it's okay if you're dealing with some subjects where the effect isn't too vast, like, for instance, mechanics or architecture or, I don't know, something pertaining to physical aspects of life. But when we try to bring back information pertaining to something of real substance that is above our level of normal consciousness, our interpolation of the facts and our tendency to interject our earthbound experiences into what the information we're receiving to make it more palatable kind of changes it, and it makes it more difficult to perceive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is part of the problem with this whole operation of gaining reliable information through this loop. And it also points to the fact that it's like anything else. The more you use it, the better it gets, the more accurate you become, and the more substance you can retrieve from this realm.
Mm-hmm. I guess if I tried saying it in another way, it would be like drawing the conclusion that there would be more power in a state of knowing, in conjunction with action, as opposed to basing everything that we give power to in its past sense. The past has already occurred, and so it won't change. So it can't, the power can't be increased in the past sense.
Yeah, well, that's actually true. Yeah, I mean, that's actually true. And it becomes obvious when you think about how things occur in our world. Like, for instance, if you have a really heavy crate sitting on a loading dock, and you attempt to move it, it will move more easily after it's been nudged into action than it would when you first try to cause motion. Also, mm-hmm. if something is moving along in a straight line and you want to just change its direction, then the amount of effort that it takes to just alter the direction is much smaller than the effort that it takes to propel the object. If that wasn't true, you couldn't steer your car. And all these things suggest that the higher up the scale you go, the more immediate things are in the relationship to their realization versus the knowing, until finally you get to a point where I guess knowing becomes the same as being.
Yes.
And that's probably what God is.
That in essence, that's what I'm referring to. Yes, he said it very, very accurately in that last sentence. That somehow we, in repeating the same things over and over again, all we're doing is putting action in a past sense. We're not moving it forward or upward. And we're not acknowledging what is yet to be known. We are just purely dealing with what is known. And that, in that lies the power that the powers that be exert over us, knowing that we won't leave that that realm. We've been conditioned, and we're constantly conditioned to stay in the past and identify. That's where the ego, that's what gives the ego its life. That's what gives the false self its life. So if we expect to resolve problems by dealing with them from the past and pulling solutions out of the past or the known, I think the known and the ego are the same thing. Or the powers that have already been exerted are past. So do they even have power? They become illusions at that point. Do they not?
Well, yeah, but it's really interesting because once you go through that for a long enough period of time, it's there because you expect it to be there. I mean, actually, that kind of illusionary manipulation is made use of a lot in martial arts, especially in the higher stuff like ninjutsu. You know, the ninja studies how he can interact not just with the body to make, murderous blows when necessary, but also with our belief structure, which he knows isn't real, but he knows that we believe it's real. And so that's when they play games with that, that's how they can appear and disappear and be in front of you 1 minute and in back of you the next, and all of these kind of things. And the person to whom it's being done is flabbergasted. But that's because he's operating at a lower level of consciousness. So actually, consciousness can be raised up in so many different ways, depending on what it is you're trying to achieve, that it's really quite striking. I was just having a conversation the other day with a friend of mine regarding the samurai archers, because they had incredible powers. Stuff that in our time and in our normal world would be considered, as absurd as the pixies and fairies. But yet it's a known fact that they could do these things. They could hit targets in complete darkness, hundreds of feet away with absolute certainty and absolute accuracy, even if they're blindfolded in the middle of the night. And it turns out that when you look into this, they establish a relationship with their bow and with each arrow that they hand make. They don't go to the hardware store or the arrow store or whatever it is and buy a bunch of arrows to fill their quiver. They make each one by hand, and they form an alliance with the spiritual component of those arrows and the material that they're made from and the way it's fabricated and a whole amount of emotional energy and feeling and all kinds of stuff is of a higher nature is impregnated into these weapons when they make them. And then when they need to use them, it's actually literally a projection of yourself.
It's a living being.
It's like a living being. So they talk to their arrows and tell them where they want them to hit. And they do. This is almost bordering on the miraculous. And it just goes to show you the kinds of things that can be done. I'll tell you a very interesting story because it happened to me. And it's so utterly amazing that even now when I look back on it, I'm still awed by it. A number of years ago, when my son was quite a bit younger, I took him to a survival camp up in northern New Jersey that was run by an Indian tribe. And it was really, really well done. I mean, the stuff that they did and the stuff that they taught was so far removed from your everyday experiences that I know it made a profound effect on him, and it certainly made a profound effect on me. And I knew about some of these things already, but, it's a whole different thing of hearing about it or knowing about it and living through it. The effect is just totally different. Mm-hmm. And the exercise that I want to relate to you is extraordinary in the way it's executed. they wait till a moonless night, and they have a campfire built in the middle of the camp square, and you have your tents set up all around this square, and they maybe 1 o'clock in the morning when it's absolutely dark, they have this campfire going, and they have a drummer who's sitting there just beating a drum. And then each person is assigned a watcher. And the only thing the watcher does is make sure that you don't get hurt in any way. And they take you a mile into the forest, away from the camp, and they blindfold you. And you're supposed to find your way from where you're released all the way back to the center of camp only by listening to the beat of the drum. And you're not allowed to peek or anything, and you just tune in to your higher senses. And I'm telling you, Don, this is something everyone should go through. Because what happens is that if you don't panic or anything, as you start to walk, you become aware of your surroundings by means of some other facility, because you obviously can't see. And you can feel the trees. You can feel the rocks. You can feel everything. And it after a while, you get to this strange point where you are steering yourself by gray vision. I call it gray vision because the way it looks in your mind is that you have a kind of a black field where you can't see anything, like when your eyes are closed. But then as you start to concentrate more and direct your consciousness more to your surroundings without using your eyes, your mind still picks up something. And after a while, you actually see images in a very light shade of gray over your dark field. And it's almost like seeing. It's really amazing. And anyway, you navigate just by listening to the drummer until you get all the way back to the camp. And, of course, it's not a roaring bonfire, but when you get close enough, then you begin to perceive the light a little bit, and you know you're on the right path. But that's only in the last few hundred feet. So just so you don't break your neck on something, there's a guy who's following along with you, and you might know he's there, but you'll never hear him. They can walk through the forest and not make a sound, these Indians. It's amazing. But here's the point that I wanted to make. I was brought out a mile out from the camp, just like everybody else, and I made it all the way back just by listening to that drum. I never hit a rock or a tree or anything until I walked into the complex, and I walked right into the side of a parked car. And I couldn't believe it. It was the only thing I couldn't see. And then later on, I discussed that with the guide, and, an automobile has never been alive. An automobile hasn't got a spiritual component to it anymore. The original materials from which it was made may have had that, but it doesn't have the same aural field around it that the trees and the rocks and the grass and all the other stuff has. And so, to me, that was such a profound experience. I was reveling in the fact that I could actually use this gray vision to steer myself, and I was feeling pretty exalted over my accomplishment until I walked into the side of this car. And then, of course, I realized, after having discussed it with the guide, the reason why I couldn't see it or feel it. But the point I'm trying to make here is that there is so much more to this world than people allow themselves to realize. And when you start to go through experiences like that, it's mind-opening. It's consciousness elevating. I mean, just knowing about that is exciting. When you experience it, it's unforgettable.
Now, there's two things that come to mind if I can share them with you.
Please.
Because they apply to what you're speaking about in two distinct senses. One is my upbringing in music. You know, I had a classical training on my first instrument. My first instrument was the trumpet. And so as I began learning the trumpet, you learn the classical music to learn all the idioms of playing the instrument. You learn all the material that makes one a good trumpet player. You learn all the technical issues of playing the instrument. And if you really apply yourself to them in a positive way, you will be a good musician, a consummate musician. And it can be applied to learning any instrument. There's a drawback to playing classical music, and that's that the way classical music is judged, the way it's appreciated, is like painting the same painting over and over again. In other words, you get the painting a certain way, and for it to be the same painting, you have to paint it exactly the same way you painted it the first time. Anything outside of that becomes an aberration, and so if you're painting in a Renaissance style, you can only duplicate it to match the quality of it, or come up with something that causes it to transcend its original form. So in performing classical music, the big issue is not to make any mistakes. In other words, to play it as close to perfectly as you can. Now, you can only do that so many times, and it becomes very dissatisfying in that sense, because there's a spiritual element that ends up missing, because you're playing music from the past, and the only way it's accepted is if it's played perfectly. So you have nowhere else to go with it beyond that. So I became interested in composing my own music and getting into other types of music that allowed freedom of expression and allowed for other opportunities. Improvisation is the perfect medium in music to allow that to occur, to allow a beingness in the music beyond just performing it in a past sense. That's one example of what you were describing. Now, another, more appropriately, in terms of this experience of finding your way through the forest, with your senses, your normal five senses are, dulled, or masked to some extent, would be my perception of a murder case as a psychic. There was a lady in my hometown some years ago that was murdered, and this was an unsolved case. And when the case was brought to my attention, I thought to myself, I don't want to get involved in that. It's too dark of a subject. It's not something that I even want to consider looking at. And I even had a few people suggesting, why don't you see if you can solve this case? And I had actually decided that I wanted nothing to do with it. One day, I'm driving past this house where the murder occurred, and there was a traffic light a couple of houses ahead, so I ended up stopping right in front of this house. And I turned and gazed at the front door of the house. The house was vacant at this time, but I had a vision of the two people that committed the murder knocking on the door. And I began to hear their conversation with the victim who answered the door, heard them ask to use the telephone. I had the sense of the temperature in the house. The house was extremely hot. I could see the woman had just arrived home with her groceries and was putting the groceries away, and had several bags sitting on the counters. And I saw this whole event take place. And so I went to the police with this information. And I happened to speak to the first policeman I spoke to was the first officer on the scene. He was a sergeant. And he was flabbergasted by the information I gave him. And I asked him why he had the look on his face that he had. And he said, well, either you're very psychic or you committed the murder. Because you're seeing exactly what I saw when I got there. I mean, you're describing the murder scene exactly as it was, as we found it. And so I know that, in a sense, that we can transcend time. Now, in that case, I was sort of catapulted into the past and saw all this, but I was seeing it as if I was seeing it in real time, as if I was seeing it now. And it's a difficult thing to communicate to somebody because you instantly become a suspect when you see things in that kind of detail. Yet I was able to convince them that I was just seeing these things, and they knew I was right, and they knew that I hadn't committed that murder. They had other evidence to show that there were two people involved. So what you're describing in these experiences is the same kind of energy or the same power being tapped into, because we do have those abilities.
Oh, we absolutely.
Now, having heard me say that, I don't know if you can connect with either one of those two experiences, but, you know, in the way I presented them.
Well, I can certainly connect with the second one, because I've had a lot of experiences of a similar nature. Not to that depth, but enough to let me know that there's a whole mess of stuff going on, at higher levels in my own existence than I'm normally aware of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, actually, I'll be honest with you. When I was younger, I had a lot more of that going on than I do now. And I noticed that a lot of that activity ceased when I married. And I don't know if that's coincidence or if it's just because, you know, sharing your life with another person affects those things. But that was a very big change for me. But when I was younger, before that, I had a lot of experiences that can only be described as off the wall. And they were not of any particular value to anyone, but because of the fact that they happened the way they did, they signaled me to the fact that that there are other facets of reality which we normally ignore.
Mm-hmm.
So I know exactly what you're talking about, even though I didn't experience anything in that depth.
Yeah, I think, you know, the two examples are ways of saying that, you know, there are other ways to tap into this great pool of information that's out there in the universe. And I guess, you know, the music thing is one particular aspect, but it opened up doors to my creativity that I probably never would have achieved had I just followed that singular path. It would be like you conducting the same experiment over and over again, and hoping that somehow you would get a different feeling from success or a different result from doing the experiment the same way.
Yeah, I understand what you're driving at.
Yeah, so I guess
here's the thing that stimulates me the most, even now, Don, about being able to reach these higher levels of consciousness. I think I've mentioned on numerous occasions that I was born into an Irish Catholic family and went through all the normal things that young kids do when they're studying their religion and catechism. And I had that totally unsatisfied, empty feeling about that religion you know, from adolescence on. And so as soon as I was old enough to know, I began looking into every major religion that I could find around the world to see what it is that I was missing. And there are a lot of wonderful attributes to each religion. But in my honest opinion, and I want to specify that this is my opinion, they also all lack one thing, and that is that regardless of the teachings, which often overlap, they just don't paint, with very few exceptions, they just don't paint any real in-depth picture about the nature of God. And that, to me, was more important than worrying about commandments or laws of the church or what's sinful and what isn't, and all those other things that they're so free to relate to us. I wanted to know more about the deity. And I wanted to know more about how the universe functions. What is God's place in all of that, and what is my place in all of that? And when I started to get into the Vedic readings, and the other disciplines like yoga and martial arts and things of that sort, that was the first time that I was directed toward the realization that you're not going to find it in any book. It's not in any Bible. It's not in any religious doctrine anywhere, but it's within you. And you don't need a preacher or a printed word to help you find God. You're actually supposed to find them by yourself. And that's when I really became interested in these higher levels of consciousness and this feedback mechanism that I was telling you about.
Mm-hmm.
So when you meditate on this stuff and you get information, and then you act on the information, and you get more information, and you act on that information, and after a while, it becomes a tightening loop, and you feel yourself being drawn towards something. Now, I suppose each of us have limitations as to how well we can do this and how far we can be drawn into this other experience, but when you start to do that, it's so gratifying and so revealing that you can become addicted to it. The biggest problem that I found with the whole situation is that it's so intensely subjective that it's very, very difficult to share it with another person. They have to have been there themselves. And then if there's a link of commonality, then there's mutual understanding. But if there isn't, you can talk until you're blue in the face, and it doesn't do any good. It's something you have to find on your own. And I think that that's a very important thing for people to realize when it comes to the difference between, let's say, religious dogma and pure spiritual consciousness. They're very, very different. And the higher consciousness that we're striving for, you might be able to get guidance from somebody else in terms of what to try, what not to do, or whatever, but you have to take the trip alone.
And
And I'm not sure that people are aware of that, you know, because most community activities and church activities and whatnot kind of give you the implication that the group effort is more important. But in reality, to my way of thinking, the most important thing you can do is establish a one-to-one relationship with God.
It seems like man's way of approaching God and understanding God and the grander concepts of the universe have been made unnecessarily complex. When you do find God, or discover a way to communicate with God, it's actually very simple. I've found that there's a way to pray that is so simple that it produces results every time, and yet someone would describe the results of that prayer as a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
And there was nothing miraculous about it. It was to be expected. And it's
right,
the expectancy
right.
in the prayer.
Or it's
the expectancy of making this connection that you're talking about, because it doesn't have to happen solely through prayer either.
No, there's probably many ways to establish it, and I understand exactly what you mean by the expectancy. And the other thing, of course, is that there needs to be an energy component associated with that, the energy of emotion. There has to be a certain passion involved, and that's the reason why most people that are trying to do these things frown on formula prayers, because after your 10th or 20th Hail Mary, you certainly aren't in the same frame of mind and with the same feeling as you may have been when you started. And the other thing is that formula prayers have the tendency of keeping the context of your prayer associated with your physical senses. You're mouthing the words. You're hearing yourself say the words. You're often in a kneeling position, and you're saying the formulas, and so you're thinking of the words. The real thing that's exciting is that when you use the language that God uses, which is pictures. That to me is when you get the kind of results you were just talking about. You picture something into the universe with the realization that it's going to happen, and you power that with the motion of adoration, and you do it with the confidence of expectation, and that's a real prayer. We have to also be kind of conscious of the fact that there are three types of prayer, and most people are always making prayers of petition. I want this, I need that, I'd like to see this happen, blah, blah, blah. But there's also prayers of gratitude, which we should render up to God on a regular basis, just because we're here, just because we can, just because he's there. And then, of course, there's the prayer of a pure adoration, which is rendered for no reason in particular. We have gotten so far away from true understanding of spirituality in our country and so immersed in the muck of materialism that I think that's in part, that and our ignorance in general are the two major contributing factors to the mess we're in right now, Don.
Mm-hmm. There is an apathy or a sort of a disconnect. We talk about, what mainstream religion teaches is that we're separate from God. That's not a choice God made. That's a choice that we have made. And when
right.
it's taught to us by the middleman, and there are some well-meaning religious leaders out there that know how to deliver a message, maybe a prophetic message or something that's through an action, through a state of being, that is way outside the norm, but the majority are keeping people locked in a set of rules, like you said, a dogma. And it doesn't promote growth. It doesn't promote the creativity or the imagination that's available to us to create. And like you were saying, creating a story or creating an image, a picture, is doing all that. I mean, a picture tells a story. We say a picture speaks a thousand words. And there is power in visualization, in visualizing those things. It's a positive action. Just a simple supplication to have your needs met, as if God owes that to you, is really counterproductive. And I think it causes us to stay in this laziness, this apathy, if you want to call it that. And
yeah, I know exactly. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
Well, I was just concluding that statement, and in a state of ignorance, where we become so so enamored with our false self, our ego, that if we don't get our way, we turn away from God and seek the answer somewhere else.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And as a matter of fact, I don't often talk about this, but to be honest with you, I rarely ask God for anything for myself. What I basically try to do is to let it be known to Him that I'm here to serve Him. And when I have problems, I don't go running to God about it. I assume that He wants me to solve them. And I've always done that. And I will exert the best efforts I can to achieve whatever end is necessary. And I also use the feedback mechanism because, you know, that supplies legitimate information. And I've always gotten by that way. And frankly, that's the way I learned the things that I've applied to my technical interests, is by doing that. I wouldn't feel the same way about the things I have discovered if they were just flat out given to me. The real joy comes when you really work hard to earth, not only to get the information from the Godhead, but to figure out what it means, to apply it to a theory, which is something your conscious mind can cope with, and then go through all the actions necessary, the raising of money, the design work, the test, the building, you know, the whole gamut. And then when finally the thing is sitting in front of you functioning, I don't know any feeling that's similar to that except the way I felt when my children were born. And that's probably where that idea comes from, that your inventions are children of the brain, because mm-hmm. they are. You've gone through a creative process to make it happen, and God is your partner. And it's an amazing feeling. It's an amazing feeling.
Well, for the listening audience out there, I'm seeing these light switches turning on, you know, left and right, and I'm sensing that people are getting this picture of how we can become self-empowered and self-reliant, not in to the exclusion of everyone else, but we've got to extricate ourselves from this dependency on someone else solving our problems. I think that's our biggest flaw, is that we've been conditioned to expect someone else to solve our problems. And it's those that tell us that they're going to do that don't solve them. You know, the politicians that tell us, yes, you know, we're going to fix this and we're going to fix that and everything's going to be fine. It just gets messed up more and more. Go ahead.
You're absolutely right. I mean, to me, it's mind-boggling that people are still hypnotized by this nonsense. When did you ever see a politician fix anything? I don't care who they are. From the president right on down to, you know, the guy who sweeps the floor in the Capitol building. There isn't any of them that can ever do anything for you.
They fix the election. They fix the election.
Oh,
We had it done in 2000, didn't we? Probably in 2004.
That's for sure, but that's a far cry from what I meant.
I know. I got a joke in, didn't I?
That was a good one. I laughed. It was a good one. But that's the thing people have to realize. You know, if you picture yourself back in the days of, I don't know, pick one of our national heroes, Davy Crockett, for instance, or Daniel Boone, or any of those people that we're always talking about. You know, these people forged into the wilderness, built their own homes from nothing except what the environment supplied them with, raised crops, raised a family, and just went through the actions of an entire lifetime, and they did it on their own. Wouldn't it be a totally different story if we sang the ballad of Davy Crockett and included the fact that you had some yo-yo in Washington supplying the lumber and you know the buckskins that he wore and the material that he built his rifles from and all this kind of stuff? I mean, there has to be a return to self-reliance, and I think that with that comes a higher confidence in who we are and a natural turning towards God. I really believe that.
And a knowing who we are.
Absolutely.
And it's through that knowing that we can enter the state of being. You know, and that adds fuel, that adds the power. Therein lies that power that you were talking about. Self-empowerment and then cooperation, working together for a higher goal. And I don't consider making AT&T a bigger company a higher goal.
No, nor do I.
Or IBM or McDonald's or Coca-Cola or any of these banks or mortgage companies. It's more of the smoke and mirrors with all of those things. And they're all going to die out because they're feeding off of they're like parasites. They're feeding off of their own methods of deception.
Yeah, by the way, you brought up a really interesting point when you threw in all those big names. Everybody and their uncle now wants to join this bailout thing. I mean, individual states are asking for money. Individual municipalities are asking for money. I mean, are these people all crazy? Don't they realize that there is a limited amount of cash available? I mean, if they all get bailed out, there'll be nothing left of anything, and then nobody will be bailed out.
It's corporate welfare. We've entered a stage now where these big behemoths of success are at the welfare state.
Exactly.
Or status.
That raises socialism to a whole new plateau, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Corporate socialism. What a concept.
You know, we have obsolescence built into everything that's made in the material world, too. what came through when you were describing running into this parked car, you know, that was the last impediment in your path, and it had no life in it. And they could make cars that they are alive, but they're made to fall apart. They're made to decay from the time that you start it up and drive it out off the lot at the dealership. They make cars to begin rusting out within a few years, and because the intention is to take more of your money. It's not to provide you with a reliable product, a product that serves you, and it shows what they think of your money, that they're willing to take so much of it and make it become worthless in such a short period of time. It's don't you get the feeling that we're just hamsters on an exercise wheel The only thing is they're not giving us the fodder at the bottom of the cage. You know, the litter.
Yeah.
And the little water bottle, you know, with the bead.
No, I know exactly what you mean. I've often felt I wanted to get off the merry-go-round. And I'll be honest with you about something, too, Don. If it wasn't for the absolute commitment that I have given to try and bring some higher knowledge to the earth for the sake of alleviating the nonsense that we're submerged in now, I would very probably disappear completely out of this type of society. I lived for 9 years in almost total solitude in the wilderness of northern Michigan, and I could go anywhere in the world and probably survive very nicely and reestablish my contact with God and live out my days just pondering the wonder of it all. And that's a real big temptation because our lives are so hollow and so unnatural and so unfulfilled the way they've been designed, that's exactly how you feel, like you're running on an endless conveyor and you're not getting anywhere. And I think that contributes to all of the misery that we have in the world. Look at the nonsense that's going on in Japan, where young children, they're basically children, in their late teens, maybe early 20s, they form these suicide packs, and they all kill each other, 10, 15, 20 at a time. Why? Because their life has no meaning. It's just a repetitive, unfulfilling repetition one day after the next that finally gets them so depressed that they decide to leave. I mean, certainly that's a very telling issue.
Mm-hmm. And certainly there's some aspect of their experience here that's contributing to that. Even, you know, to cause them to make those decisions. And I don't mean just the realization of those circumstances, but it's as if this is another one of these behind the scenes forces at work, subliminally or technologically being directed just to cause people to do that, just to see what kind of rise they can get out of a new technology or a new way of controlling society. I was just going to say, I also see a pattern developing where there are new souls coming to this earth, and they're not really here to help us fix our problems. They're going to take care of business the way it should be taken care of. It's up to us to fix the problems that we've created. They're not here to help fix those.
No, I think that's only the right thing, too, because it's our responsibility. I mean, who are the ones that are supposedly the caretakers of this world? It certainly isn't the raccoons or the chipmunks, but maybe they do a better job than we've done. You know, we created all of our messes, and it's up to us to fix all of our messes. I know there are extraterrestrial beings. You don't have to be so bright to figure that out. But I don't look at them as another savior. Why should they come here and fix our problems? You know, that's the same old story. There's no worth in something that you're given free of charge. So,
yet at the same time, were we to give them some indication that we're willing to help ourselves, they would probably help us.
That's right. It's the old story about God helps those who help themselves, well, so do higher beings. It's not so hard to understand.
Well, in terms of, in parting, we're about out of time here. In parting, one of the issues that keeps coming up, a lot of people ask me, and you would be the person to answer this question, where I see our energy problems going, and I know your stance on that whole thing, but we have this mantra of, you know, where we have energy problems, and it's all contrived. What do you see on the horizon, on the more immediate horizon? Are we going to be still playing this game of whatever a barrel of oil is selling, or are we somehow going to move into a higher state of consciousness where these new ideas and these new inventions are finally going to break through and be accepted?
Well, first of all, I think we're brainwashed to the point where it's almost ridiculous. They now use the term energy, which initially in physics had a totally different meaning, to describe oil and gas as if they were synonymous. And, you know, that's a perfect example of brainwashing people. They associate the products of oil and gas with the word energy, which is incorrect to begin with, but that's what they do. And then, you know, everybody is thinking every time there's an energy problem, oh, we need more oil. Well, that association needs to be fractured, for one thing. The other thing is that there are many people, not just me, who are working diligently on understanding new methods of power generation and new ways of delivering electrical energy and heat energy and what have you to the world that are not oil dependent. And those people are prevented from, in great measure, from making progress because, unfortunately, that kind of research requires money. And the same people who control the oil also control the money, and they make sure you don't get any.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some people that are starting to have a different turn of mind on these subjects. Lately, we're inundated on TV with advertisements about Boone Pickens and his interest in wind power. Now, it may be a long way from what Nikola Tesla could have given us, but at least it's a step away from oil. We have to forget about oil and start looking at the fact that God has given us other means of sustaining ourselves. And until we start seeing different forms of decentralized power, where the big utilities and the big gas and oil companies do not have to be involved in the running of our homes, the running of our schools, and this type of thing, everything that they do is designed to rope us into a control loop. You know, the food, the oil, the electricity, the money, the banks, everything. And until we break free of all of that stuff, we're still going to have numerous problems, and our desire for attaining higher levels of consciousness is going to be impeded. But as to what I see on the horizon, I think you're going to see breakthroughs in the next year or two regarding new ways of looking at power and new ways of obtaining it. I don't think that it's going to burst onto the scene, you know, in a great explosion of glory, because there's too many forces working against it. But I think you're going to start to see things appear. Maybe not in this country, but somewhere. Because the forces, the very forces that they are mustering to stop this and to exert greater control, are having the effect of prompting those people who are gifted in those directions to step up their research and find other solutions. And I say all the better for that.
Yeah. There's an awareness, which is really spreading around the whole planet right now amongst many scientists and even amateur inventors or people that just apply their creative thought processes to solving a problem. There's this awareness of crystal technology. I mean, we have examples of this in nature, that crystals are definitely a component that could play a major role in the transduction of power that can be applied in a number of areas. Crystals interact with light, and any scientist with half a peanut worth of a brain will tell you that light has information in it.
Right.
That information properly applied can be used in a variety of ways. We're already, to some extent, using crystal technology. When I was a little kid, we had crystal radios. We don't even see those things anymore. It's as though everything that really has the ability to transcend all of this control has been suppressed. But I think I'm agreeing with you. I'm feeling that there's something on the horizon that's really going to be explosive in nature. And once it hits, it's going to be unstoppable.
Well, that's a good thing. And the world will be a better place for it, and it will also have the effect of raising the consciousness. And I'll make a prediction about it, too. It's not going to come from a major university like MIT, and it's not going to come from some gigantic company like GE. It's going to come from some obscure place and possibly some humble individual who has gotten the information directly from the deity and decides to do something wonderful with it. And that's really the way mankind's greatest leaps of progress have always been made.
Yes. Well, Jim, we're out of time. It's been a very interesting 2 hours, as usual. And I want to thank you for your contribution to this discussion this evening.
Well, I'm always glad to do it, Don. You know that.
And look forward to what we might discuss next week. We don't have to decide that now. We can let things play out, I think. They'll give us plenty of topics to talk about.
That's for sure.
Well, I want to thank you, and I'm going to say goodnight to our listening audience and thank them for hanging in there while we fought through these little technical glitches this evening. That happens from time to time. You have been listening to Evident Footprints and our special guest, scientist, inventor, author Jim Murray. And he was a teacher and a lecturer tonight as well as my emergency co-host. Great job, Jim.
Thank you, Don.
Yeah, special thanks to Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible and Seth Hendrick on the sound. And most of all, to the listening audience for tuning in. We wish you all a wonderful weekend. We'll be back again next Monday through Friday, same time, same place, bbsradio.com. In the meantime, have a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.